it. What a goal by Lyon.
Kind of throw this one in the trash and move on. That's not obviously the way you want to start.
Shooting is off of Hellebuck. Rebound is out of the net. Stopped by Hellebuck. Key saves for Connor Hellebuck.
Totson scores. Sidney Crosby.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.
Stand by highlight. Stand by host. You big boy.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Miles, everyone.
With Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.
And cue the little criminal.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And now, Charlie McAvoy, who's one for one this year. And one for one career. A 19-year-old can win it. He's with his fifth team of the last year. He'll pick it up. McAvoy swings in, shoots, scores. Boston wins it. Charlie McAvoy, the hero. The final score. Boston 2, Winnipeg 1 in a shootout.
Are you awake, Winnipeg? I think we are. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. It's an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and Islanders puck drop at noon Central Time, live from Brooklyn. You can hear that game, of course, on TSN 1290. The Jets pregame show begins at 11 o'clock with Kevin O and friends. Drew Mendel is off this week, so it's just Dave M and I. And we're going to start you off at 7:30. With Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. 8 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Andy Graziano, writer for Sportsnet New York. And then at 8:30, we're going to be joined by Mark Masters of TSN to preview the 2018 World Junior Championships. They kick off, of course, on Boxing Day, live from Buffalo, New York. Dave, want to start off the show talking about that game Thursday night between the Jets and Bruins. They lose in the shootout. The game was scoreless up until the midway point of the third period. The Bruins pull ahead, and then Patrick Laine ties it up. And then, of course, we played the clip. Charlie McAvoy, on his birthday, scores the shootout winner. Just, first of all, your overall thoughts on that game. A bit of a sloppy game for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, Boston has proven to be a tough place for Winnipeg to get a win. I think they have one win as the franchise in Boston, or I think specifically as Winnipeg, I think they have like one win there, and it hasn't been a good place to come out of with 2 points. So it's been a little bit tough for Winnipeg in that respect. I thought overall it was a good game. I thought the goalies were both really, really, really good. I thought Tuukka Rask was excellent. I thought Connor Hellebuck also was excellent. And it was just a low scoring. It was almost like when Torrey Krug got that goal, you know, 11 minutes into the third, you kind of felt like, oh, that could be the game winner because both goalies were playing so well. And then, of course, Patrick Laine scores that laser beam on a beautiful no-look pass by Nikolai Ehlers. So
it was a beauty.
Yeah, it was. You know what? It was funny because like they both had 17 goals at that point. I thought, oh, maybe Nikolai Ehlers isn't going to pass over. He wants to take the lead on his good friend Patrick Laine. But yeah, no, that was a really nice pass by Ehlers over to Laine. And of course, he had already hit the post once, at least once in the game, and his shot was just, you know, lights out as we're used to seeing here in Winnipeg. So I thought it was a bit of a slop. I thought the ice was a little bit sloppy, and I know the players were complaining about that a little bit. But I thought overall, like really, it was just a goaltending duel, and that it was one of those games that you looked at it and thought both teams deserved at least 1 point. And both teams were playing very well, and even though Boston was dealing with some health issues with players who were sick, I mean Brad Marchand had been sent home earlier in the day, ended up playing the game, but
Riley Nash, Ryan Spooner didn't play.
Right, exactly, yep. And so those were the other two players who had been sent home. So you've got that, and Krejci was out of the game as well, right? So Boston was missing some guys, but they're a tough team at home. And overall, they've been a solid team. So they had coming off a 3-0 win over Buffalo. I just thought it was a kind of a gutsy effort. It was one of those games that, you know, from the Jets' perspective, now you're 1-0-1 on this road trip, which again is already pretty successful. And you know, if you can come into New York and take 2 points or even one, you're feeling pretty good. But I thought it was a game the Jets could have won, but at the same time, like I said, I thought either team really deserved to win.
Dave, with the point, the Jets' overall record improves to 20 wins, 10 losses, and 6 overtime losses. The Jets' road record is now 8-7-5. And most importantly, the Jets are now tied with the Nashville Predators and the St. Louis Blues for first in the Central, even though the Preds have those extra games in hand. Dave, earlier you mentioned the goaltending. I want to play this clip of Connor Hellebuck after Thursday night's game talking about not getting the extra point and talking about playing in the shootout.
How fun was it, you know, from your standpoint to be able to make those stops and then watch Rask at the other end as well?
Well, I like making the stops. I don't really like watching them at the other end, but it was a good game. Yeah, he played pretty well.
Is that a game where you can feel pretty good about getting out with a point because it really could have gone either way?
Yeah, we always feel good about a point, but it's happening a little too much to my liking, especially in the shootout. I take shootouts personally, and I don't like losing them, so we got a point, but we want more.
Could you have done something differently in the shootout, do you think? Was there?
Well, I could have made two saves, yeah. But that's being hard on myself. You know, I want those, and I've been working hard at it, and I've been practicing pretty hard on my breakaways, and sometimes they make a good shot, and sometimes they get a little bit of luck.
You know, I love that clip of Connor Hellebuck. He mentions he takes shootouts personally, Dave. He doesn't like losing them. And, you know, he was being tongue-in-cheek with the reporters there, you know, Brian Munns, Ted Wyman, Mike Sawatsky. But, you know, for a goaltender that has a record of 18-4, a save percentage of .920, a couple shutouts, he's arguably a Vezina candidate, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And there are other goaltenders, I think, that you could put in the Vezina conversation as well. But certainly, Connor Hellebuck is in that discussion with 18 wins. He's top three in the league in wins. You know, what do you think about those comments? Because you think you'd be pretty happy with getting that extra point. But as you mentioned, I mean, he wasn't really happy with the way he played in the shootout.
You know, the one thing I'm noticing with Connor Hellebuck this season, in addition to all the on-ice improvements, is that he's just more comfortable in his skin. And I'm used to dealing with Connor Hellebuck because I dealt with him a lot when he played for the Moose. And he was a very down-to-earth guy, and he's very easy to talk to. And I think that he, when he came into the NHL last year, I think he felt that, you know, there was a lot riding on him. And you know, sometimes when he would talk to the media, sometimes it was just trying to put on a bit of a persona. And I think now you're seeing the real Connor Hellebuck a little bit more. And he's letting his personality come through a little bit more. So I think what fans are hearing is that is the genuine Connor Hellebuck. That's just the way he feels about these games. So, you know, it's good for him. I mean, the truth is that you should want to win every game. You should want to not be satisfied with just a single point out of a game. And you know, he's not wrong. He could have made, in his mind, those saves to win the game for his team. So I appreciate the honesty. I like it. It's not just false bravado. I think that it is actually genuinely what he believes. And again, it's not out of left field. It's not like, oh, you know, I let in five goals, but I love my game. It was, you know, he played a really strong game, and he felt that he deserved to be, you know, earning 2 points, not one. So I like the candor from Connor Hellebuck in that post-game interview.
Yeah, Dave, I do too. And if you think about it, Nikolaj Ehlers hits the post. It goes off of Tuukka Rask, mm-hmm. and hits the post. So, I mean, the Jets could have easily won that shootout. And when you're talking about who scored on Hellebuck, David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy. Charlie McAvoy, one of the best young defensemen in the NHL, and David Pastrnak, one of the most dynamic offensive players in the entire league, right? So it's not like, you know, schlubs were scoring on Hellebuck. These are good players that scored in the shootout. But you know how I feel about the shootout.
I saw it on your tweet.
Well, it's a coin flip, and as far as I'm concerned, you should have 10 minutes of overtime, whether that's 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. I, to be honest with you, don't even really like watching it. I mean, I did watch the shootout on Thursday night, of course, but for me, it's just not the way you should end games. You don't see games ended like that in the playoffs. Anyways, Dave, I could talk about this for 5 minutes. I digress. I want to talk about Kyle Connor starting the game on the left side on the second line, Dave, alongside Brian Little and Patrick Laine. And then in the third period, we saw Ehlers and Connor switched, and then Connor was back on the top line with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. How did you think Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers played? I guess we know how you feel about Ehlers, obviously. He got the big assist on Laine's game-tying goal. But just overall, the dynamic of those two lines, and then Maurice going back to Kyle Connor on that top line after starting him on the second line.
Yeah, you know, it just goes to show you the luxury you have when you can kind of flip and flop Nikolaj Ehlers with Kyle Connor. And he's had enough experience last year with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler that he can play with them. And especially, you know, Ehlers' speed, and we've talked about it a lot, is really well used on that first line because he matches up so well with Wheeler and Scheifele. Both those guys can keep up with him, whereas Lainey and Little don't necessarily have that same step that Ehlers has. So from Ehlers' a line perspective, you know, you're throwing Nikolai Ehlers onto that Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler line, I think makes him like that much better because Ehlers obviously is a better player than Cal Connor. And the truth is that Cal Connor can be a bit of a facilitator because he's younger and he's a little bit more inclined to pass over to his line mates. So you've got in Wheeler a facilitator who's willing to pass over to Scheifele or Ehlers, and then now you've got Cal Connor more willing to pass over to Brian Little or Patrick Laine. So I think those there are compliments to be found on with that flip flop, but there's also, like I said, the versatility that any one of those six can really play with the other players. I mean, we obviously know Blake Wheeler and Brian Little have a good association. Mark Scheifele can pretty much play with anyone. So really, it's a luxury for Coach Maurice that if he feels that maybe I'm not getting exactly what I need to see out of, you know, Nikolai Ehlers one game, then I can flip him over here or vice versa with Kyle Connor. And it is, like I said, it's a nice luxury for this team to have.
And Dave, we talked about it on Wednesday's show. I thought that Nikolai Ehlers maybe had his best game ever in the NHL against the Nashville Predators on Tuesday night. He could have easily had a hat trick. He ended up, obviously, with the two goals, including the go-ahead goal. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Kyle Connor, he doesn't have any points in the last five games, so I think that might factor in. But you look at his ice time, Dave, it was 17 and a half minutes against the Bruins, very similar to what he had against Nashville and against the St. Louis Blues in those back-to-back games. So it's not like Kyle Connor is being buried or anything like that. And to your point, I think you can have Connor or Ehlers on that top line. And same thing goes for players like Laine and Wheeler. You're not really going to lose much. And I think Connor's been playing really well. Maybe he's not shooting the puck enough. That's maybe one criticism of Kyle Connor. He had a career-high 7 shots against the Blues last week, but that's maybe something that Paul Maurice wants to get going with Connor, and maybe that's why you saw him the first two periods on the line with Brian Little and Patrick Laine. We expect Kyle Connor to start the game on the first line, but we shall see what happens today. As we mentioned earlier, the pregame show starts at 11 o'clock today with Kevin Owen Friends. The afternoon ride will kick us off at 9 o'clock right after us. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, Dave, a former member of the GST line was on the warm-up on Thursday with Rick, and we're going to play that interview next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, early in the morning, just past 7:15. I don't think I've been up this early, Dave, in like maybe 6 months.
Maybe the last time we did an early show.
Yeah. It's very early. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. On Thursday, on the warm-up with Slick Rick Ralph, a former member of the GST line, Jim Slater, was on the show. You remember him from the GST line alongside Chris Thorburn and Tanner Glass. Here's that interview.
One of the former Winnipeg Jets, Jim Slater, still giving her a go over, not only just giving it a go in the Swiss League, but leading his team in scoring. And we welcome him back to the program. How are you?
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What's going on over there? 10 goals. I think you're almost a point-a-game guy, 24 and 29, and everybody's following your lead, Jim.
Yeah, I got the offensive touch here right now, but no, it feels good. Definitely a different situation that I'm playing over here than I did, you know, back in the NHL, and it feels good. You know, you're playing power play, you're playing penalty kill, you're playing 5-on-5, all situations, and it's been really good. It's been a lot of fun. It's been kind of reviving a little bit, so it's been a great experience.
Are you playing penalty kill, power play, and 5-on-5 all in like one game? What's your ice time?
Can you believe it?
I can believe it. What's the ice time?
You know, it's around 20 to 23 minutes, just kind of depending, you know, what happens, if it's a close game or not. And, yeah, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun to be out there and try some things I wasn't able to do, you know, in the NHL. And, it's been a great experience.
Have you, like, developed a party dangle or any kind of special moves that we may not be, recognize?
No, you know me. Yeah. You know what? I just go to the front of the net, and out of those 10 goals, I think they've all been within 10 feet of the net. And you know, it's just kind of, you know, what the league is over here. I guess you could consider I'm one of the tougher guys because I actually hit, and so it gets you a little bit more room out there. But yeah, it's just kind of going to the net like I used to, and things are going in for me. So it's been nice.
Are you striking the fear of God into people over there, Jim?
I don't know about that. I think I'm pretty well disliked over here. I played in Geneva for 2 years, and now I'm on a new team here called Fribourg-Gotteron. And you know, talking to the guys in Geneva, they hate playing against me, so that's kind of a good thing. It's kind of a compliment.
Now, why the move to Fribourg? I wasn't sure how you pronounced it. My guess would have been Fribourg, but I thought, you know, when you get over there in with the Swiss German kind of accent, it could be all together different. Why the move?
Yeah. Well, Fribourg's kind of the home of chocolate and cheese, and I just wanted to be closer to that. But last year, it's pretty fantastic. But you know, last year I thought it was going to be my last year, and I played in Geneva for 2 years. I was the captain there, and kind of went home in the summertime. Thought it was going to be my last year, and then this whole Olympic thing kind of came about, and I was kind of sitting around and wanted to give it a shot. And you know, by that time it was probably, you know, mid-July, late July, and over here you sign, you know, during the season. A lot of guys sign during the season with teams, and I didn't want to do that just because I didn't know if I was playing or not. So, you know, mid-July kind of came around. I was like, you know what, I want to play another year. So I had my agent kind of call around to see if anybody was interested, and Fribourg was, and it was just kind of worked out well. It was the right situation for me, and you know, I've really enjoyed myself playing here.
Jim Slater with us here on TSN 1290. You know, with you mentioned the Olympics and all the NHLers, the KHLers not involved, that must be creating quite a buzz for everybody, and especially over there in Europe, Jim.
Yeah, it's been definitely the talk. You know, there's some really good hockey players over here. You know, guys that just never really got a chance to play in the NHL, and you know, they come over here, but they're still, you know, real good players, and you know, they're fast, they're skilled, and it's a good opportunity. It's definitely on your mind of wanting to do that, representing your country. And you know, it's coming up close here. It's getting a little stressful because you do want to, you know, play on that team so bad, but you never know. And like I said, there's a ton of good players over here that people may have never heard of, but it's, you know, whoever gets picked, it's going to be a great Olympics. It's one of those kind of things. It's a mystery of who's going to have who's going to end up, you know, winning the gold medal, silver medal, bronze medal, because it's kind of just a mix of everything. And that's kind of the exciting part of it.
Jim, do you figure you're on the radar somewhere? Because when you think about now players with no, like, outside of the NHL and outside of the KHL, like, it's really gets wide open.
Yeah, I'm not sure they've made the decision on the KHL just yet, but you know, talking to some guys that play in the KHL, they said, you know, if it does happen where they're not allowed to go, they would just cancel their contracts and go anyway. So I don't think that's a big of a difference as many may think. But yeah, you know, USA's only played in one tournament, the pre-Olympic tournament. That was the Deutschland Cup in Germany. I played on that. That's a big tournament to get into, to be seen. And yeah, I think you know, I think I have a good chance. You know, you never know what the coaches are looking for, what kind of team they want to bring, but I think I bring a lot to a team, and you know, hopefully I'm able to get that chance when the team's announced January 1st.
How much more do you want to play, Jim? You mentioned you went home in the off season and then kind of came back for this one. Is this it in your mind, or is there a possibility of more?
You know what, kind of up in the air. Like I said, I'm having just, you know, great time. Like I'm living in Switzerland, I'm traveling, I got a great quality life over here. I love the hockey. Like I said, I've kind of been revived a little bit. So I could see myself playing. I still love the game, but, you know, there's some other factors that go into it. You know, my family doesn't live with me over here, so my daughter's getting a little older, and it's tougher being away. And, you know, if I do end up making this Olympic team, it'd be a heck of a way to go out, and I wouldn't think twice about it. And, you know, I could see myself getting into the different part of the game, you know, after this year. But could also see myself playing, just kind of wait and see what happens. You know, the body feels good, the mind feels good. And, like I said, the toughest part is being away from my family. I am going home for Christmas for 4 days, but it's always tough to leave them to come back here. And so we'll see.
Do they have a direct flight from Fribourg right to San Diego?
San Diego. That's not Christmas time there, so we're going back to Michigan.
Oh, good.
My family's there in Michigan, so that's more Christmassy, I guess you could say. And actually, you can either fly out of Zurich or Geneva. Fribourg's right in the middle of both of those. There's not a major airport in Fribourg, but I'm flying out of Zurich. Zurich to Chicago, Chicago right to Lansing, and my home's right there in East Lansing, so nice.
How long are the road trips over there, Jim? Because I was looking earlier about, you know, some towns are 2 hours apart by train, and some of it doesn't. Well, I mean, once you get into Europe, it seems like you can get just about anywhere in a hurry.
Yeah, this here is definitely the best place to play for travel. You know, I think our farthest trip is 3.5 hours by bus, and, you know, those you just kind of catch up on your TV shows. Our closest trip is 20 minutes. There's other teams where their farthest trip is, you know, an hour and a half, and it's for travel. It's a small country, and there's some great cities here, and that's been definitely a plus of it.
Pretty much everybody speak English on the team. I mean, I see guys from all over pretty well.
Yeah, we have a North American coach named Mark French, and he's a Canadian coach, and you know, it's all English in the locker room. Obviously, you know, you got Switzerland. There's four languages. There's Italian, there's German, there's French, and there's English. So, kind of get a mix of everything in the locker room, which is kind of fun. And the main language that's spoken between everybody, the coaches and the players, is English.
Have you met Christian Dubé?
He's my GM.
Yeah, the GM. I remember the Memorial Cup I took in Hull in 1997. It was one of my first reporting assignments. He was playing for Hull, actually won it, and then, of course, drafted by the Rangers. But his father, Norm, I think, played a lot over there in Switzerland, and he's not quite a Swiss resident, I don't think, but he's been over there majority of his life, really, outside of junior and some NHL.
Yeah, Christian's had a great career over here. He's very well known. He's been the GM here in Fribourg for four or five years. So, he's doing really well for himself. He was a heck of a player over here, and he kind of stayed around and is now doing the whole management thing.
Jim, is there a thought of what to do next, or will you take that in time?
Next as in next year?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you want to open up burger chains or sell vacuums. I have no idea what you want to do after hockey.
Yeah. You know, I'm open for anything. I'm one of those guys just goes, but I still love the game. I love college hockey. I'd like to get, you know, involved in that. I'd love to get into the U.S. national program. I do love the game. You know, there's some other things that do interest me, like real estate. You know, my wife and I, we own a few properties, and that's always kind of fun to get into. But, you know, I think you always kind of do what you know best, and for me that's hockey, and I think I have a good mind for the game and good knowledge, and I think I can help a lot of players, you know, in their careers, and I would like to, you know, stay in that realm somewhat.
What about media, like following in the steps of a Shane Knighty?
Yeah, you offer me a job?
I'm not throwing anything out there. I have no control over this stuff. You probably better help me out with being a real estate mogul than I could getting into the media, but...
The media, would definitely do it. I love that stuff too. You guys got a tough job, but I think I can handle it.
Yeah, well, it depends. If we can get along with most of the people. You were never really that hard to get along with.
Yeah, you got to have those one-liners like you do, though.
Right. Well, it worked on most guys. It was the odd teammate of yours. Actually, one in particular, I guess.
I got most of them. There's a couple that maybe I didn't get, but I got most of your little quick tongue, so it was good.
Jim, at what point does the season kind of wrap up? And so I guess you're going to Michigan for the holidays, so you're not taking in the Spengler Cup.
No, you know, it's here. It's nice because you get 4 national team breaks throughout the year. So you get one in October, you get one in November, you get the one in December here, and then the Olympics in February. So, you know, those times you're able to kind of get out and travel. So, yeah, you got the Olympics, which kind of makes this year a little bit different. Playoffs start in March, and they're usually finished by the end of April. So it wraps up pretty quick. I think we're 30 games in. We played a total of 50 games. And, yeah, we're kind of in the middle of the season right now, and we get this big break over Christmas. Then when we come back, it's 1 month in the Olympics.
Do you keep an eye much on the NHL or any of the old team?
Sure do. Yeah, I mean, every morning, you know, the guys here, we watch the highlights from the night before on the TV in the locker room, and you know, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun seeing what's going on in the city of Winnipeg. It's you know, it's great to see. I'm excited for you guys. You know, I'm happy for the guys that are playing on that team right now with seeing the success that they're having. And you know, I still have a lot of people back in Winnipeg that I have really good friendships with, and they're excited about the team, and they're wearing their, you know, shirts and hats with pride. So it's a great thing to see. And yes, to your question, I do follow along pretty good.
Jim, have a good Christmas there in Michigan, and we'll keep an eye from afar on how you do with Fribourg this year, not only leading the team in points, but second in penalty minutes.
Yeah, that's. I think I just kind of got a few of these this past weekend. Yeah. So
anger management issue, perhaps.
It's a little different. You can't fight over here, but sometimes you get a little rough, and you know, that's what happens over here. But yeah, it's been good, and I appreciate you having me on, Rick. Like I said, I've always enjoyed talking to you. A lot of respect for you guys, what you do there, and you know, I really, really appreciate you having me back.
Good stuff, Jim. We'll find you again down the road, and good luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks, Rick.
That was former Winnipeg Jet Jim Slater, former member of the GST line on Thursday's warm-up with Slick Rick Ralph. Jim Slater, of course, played 4 years with the Jets and 9 with the Jets Thrashers organization. Now, as they talked about, he plays for Fribourg in the Swiss League. He's leading his team in points and second in penalty minutes. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun. We're going to tee up this afternoon's game between the Jets and Islanders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Good morning, and welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. An early morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an industrial metals Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and Islanders puck drop at noon Central Time. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Winnipeg Sun sports editor Ted Wyman on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Ted, good morning, and thanks very much for waking up very, very early with us.
Well, it's not that early here, guys. It's 8:30. I was awake already. I didn't have to set my alarm for you.
Yeah, you're always a early riser, right, Ted?
Well, when the game's at 1 o'clock, you know, you got to get prepared a little earlier than usual.
Yeah, I guess you have no choice, right? You can't get up at 10 o'clock because then you're not going to have enough time to get to the rink.
That's true, especially in New York. Boy, we had a day yesterday where we had to get to a Jets availability at their hotel and had to take an Uber from JFK, and that was the longest Uber ride I've ever taken in my life. And then a subway to our hotels, it was quite a day. The flight from Boston was nothing, but the travel around New York was long.
It's not like riding the Winnipeg Transit 20 down Academy Road to get to Bell MTS Place, is it?
Not quite, no. It's well, it's quite a city, and I've never seen it as packed as it was yesterday either. It's just a couple days before Christmas, and seems like everybody's here.
Ted, we want to start off looking back at the game on Thursday night between the Jets and Bruins, and then we want to obviously preview this afternoon's game between the Jets and Islanders. During the first segment, we played Connor Hellebuck's comments after the game on Thursday, and I know obviously you were in that scrum, and Connor Hellebuck was really not happy with the way he played in that shootout, allowing those two goals and the Jets not getting that extra point. I guess, what were your thoughts on those comments? And are you surprised that Steve Mason is going to get the start this afternoon against New York?
I think Yeah, Connor Hellebuyck has been very hard on himself this year. Every time he's been in a situation where I thought he played well, but he doesn't like losing, and he's showing that, and I think that's a great sign. A guy who just absolutely isn't going to accept anything except for almost perfection. And, you know, he wasn't happy about only getting 1 point, and he wasn't happy about the fact that they've played 7 overtime games and they only got the extra point once, and that was in a shootout. And I think everybody in this organization realizes that how much better could they be? They're in this fight for first place in the Western Conference in the Central Division, a couple of overtime wins, and they'd be all alone in first place. So, you know, there is some concern there with how that's gone for them, and I think Connor Hellebuyck felt like that was the game that they absolutely could have gotten the second point, and he wanted to make sure that he won it. And I don't think he played badly at all. I don't think he was whatsoever to blame for the Jets not getting that second point, but it's not an easy situation when it comes down to that shootout. As we all know, it's kind of a crapshoot.
Ted, you
and
know
your second question about Steve Mason, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised a little because I thought he was going to play in Boston and Hellebuyck would play this one going into the break. But Paul Maurice said yesterday that the plan was to make sure that Connor Hellebuyck got a 5-day mental break. So basically had yesterday off. We'll get out on the game day skate today, and then he'll be off completely for 3 days before likely going back into the net against Edmonton on the 27th.
Ted, there's been a lot of talk about Blake Wheeler's leadership, especially, you know, considering he got a start in Boston and how he was, you know, a young guy before he got traded to Atlanta. You know, nothing was probably more emblematic of his leadership than blocking that shot in overtime. Obviously, Coach Maurice said yesterday that he's fine. But, I mean, just the conversation about Blake Wheeler, what kind of leadership, I think that was probably displayed in that overtime, willing to sacrifice his body despite the fact that he's as important as he is to this team. You know, and what he means to his teammates. And, you know, Coach Maurice talked about it a little bit yesterday about how important the role he plays, not just on the ice but off the ice as well.
Well, you talk about what he did in overtime against Boston, but also the exact same thing in Nashville. Jets are protecting a 1-goal lead. 3 times the puck came to PK Subban at the point, and he's ready to unleash a shot. Twice Wheeler gets into the lane and makes sure that he can't shoot it and has to dish it off. The third time, Subban winds up and blasts it, and Wheeler blocks, and shortly after that, sends it down the ice into the empty net. It's those kind of things. I talked to Josh Morrissey about it, and he said, when you see your captain doing those kind of things, where he has to be helped over the boards at the end because he's so dog tired and so banged up from all those shots that he's been taking and whatnot, it just lifts the whole team up. And Morrissey said that when a guy blocks a shot like that, Andrew Kopp had one too, that the whole bench erupts almost like a guy had scored a goal. It's that important to a team, to you know, building something with the team. And I think Wheeler has really evolved into a tremendous leader. There's no question. I think we said that last year. But last year was different because last year the team was filled with injuries and young players and really wasn't finding its way. And what Paul Maurice said about him was that he did a very good job of really handling that, not getting frustrated, and keeping guys on track. And he thinks that's really paid off this year. Of course, we heard a lot about it in Boston. The Boston media still is fascinated by the fact that Wheeler somehow became not only a leader for the Jets, but also a leading scorer, because they didn't see him as that kind of player when he was in Boston. And Wheeler said that he was inconsistent and had an inconsistent role when he was in Boston. And in Winnipeg, he's had a very consistent role, top line winger for pretty much the entire time he's been here, and has just grown into this player who I don't know that there could be a more underrated player in the NHL when you look outside of Winnipeg, but he's certainly not as underrated now as he once was.
We're joined by Winnipeg Sun sports editor Ted Wyman on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ted, I wanted to ask you about Patrick Laine. We talked about him in the first segment when we were talking about Thursday night's game against the Boston Bruins. Patty Laine has 3 goals now in his last 3 games, and the last 2 games, both of those goals are at even strength. I don't want to just ask you about the importance of how Lion A's playing at even strength, but I want to specifically ask you about the amount of shots that Lion A's taking. And, you know, it was a concern against the Vancouver Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks at home. He only had one shot in each of those games, but against the St. Louis Blues last Sunday at home, he had 7 shots on net, and then against the Boston Bruins, he had 6 shots on net. Have you been noticing a more of a concerted effort by Lion A to shoot the puck more?
Hey, as Dennis Bayak would say, all is right with the world when Patrick's scoring. You know, 3 games in a row, you can really see the bounce in his step. He really loves scoring goals, and I think he's really picked it up lately. In my opinion, interestingly, though, in that game against Boston, his line with Little and Connor at the start of that game absolutely generated nothing. Their Corsi was terrible. They were doing nothing 5-on-5 for at least half the game, and then they started to pick it up a bit. And, you know, Ehlers came back onto the line, and they made something happen, Little with the turnover, Ehlers with the great pass, and Line A, he's not missing an empty net like that. He probably scores there if there's a goalie in. But he, you know, I think when that guy's shooting a lot, obviously good things are going to happen. But when you watch Patrick Line A, what he waits for is the right opportunity. He's not just a guy who rips it from everywhere. Sometimes he is, but a lot of times you'll see him, especially on the power play, go, well, you know, you could shoot one here, but I'm going to go for that cross-seam pass and whatnot. I think that he picks his spots, and when you see him, like, the best shot he took in that Boston game was one where it looked like he had a shot for the far post, and he just put it through the defenseman and off the short side post on Rask, and Rask never saw it. And after the game, Rask just said, you know, he was looking for dents on the goalpost because that's how good of a shot it was. So not worried about Patrick Laine. The guy's playing pretty well right now, better than he was early in the season, I think, and really heating up, and that's great news for the Jets.
You know, Ted, one thing we can't seem to get away from ever is the talk of scheduling and how the Jets' schedule is and, you know, the frequency of games and running them into each other and the inability to practice. But what I find curious is that Coach Maurice, when he has the option to practice, chooses instead to give his players the time to rest. How do you think the players are liking that, and why do you think the coach is doing this?
The players love it. They'd way rather not practice. There's no question, especially on the road like this. You know, yesterday was an interesting situation. I don't know exactly how it came about because we're not in the meetings, but they have their discussions. But their practice was scheduled to be out in New Jersey. And as I told you, the traffic was absolutely insane in New York yesterday. And I think that might have played a factor into it. They didn't want to take a whole bus out there, have these guys on the bus for an hour and a half each way, and then have a practice. I think they just felt like a way more valuable thing yesterday in particular would be to have meetings at the hotel and have an opportunity for these guys to rest and recover. Blake Wheeler was not going to be practicing anyway. I don't know that it's a particular injury. Maurice says his hand is fine, but obviously the guy's banged up after what he's been going through the last few games. That's the question to me is, if you know, the practice question aside, don't mean to dodge it, Dave, but obviously this team has played at a very high level of intensity the last, I'd say, 4 games in particular. How do you maintain that all season when guys are already getting battered and bruised, when the defense are already playing a few too many minutes and looking pretty ragged with the puck in the last game, I thought? You know, they got by, but they had an awful lot of trouble with it. Some of that had to do with the terrible ice in Boston. But, you know, how do you sustain it? And I've asked a few guys that, and they just say, well, you have to just, you know, you can't do it exactly like that every night. There have to be games where you don't have that and you still get points. But I think it's, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be impossible, but there's still 46 games left. I just don't think you can play that Nashville-St. Louis level every single game.
You know, Ted, you were talking to Kevin Cheveldayoff. You wrote about it in the Winnipeg Sun. There's word that Sean Matthias is on the block. At least that's what we're hearing from Sportsnet last week. But what are you thinking in terms of the Jets? Do you think that this team is thinking we need to make a move still, or do you think that he's content to kind of stand pat and just see what his group has for now?
Well, I think he's got some time to think about that. The one thing that he pointed out is they've got some pretty good players on the farm right now that are playing great. I mean, how far off is Jack Roslovic from being an NHL player? And is that where their depth comes from? Is that where whatever move they make comes from? If there's an injury, would you have a problem bringing any of those guys up? I don't think I would. But you could definitely look at this team and you could say, if they can make some kind of a trade that brings in another center that maybe changes the dynamic of how things are with that team, makes the bottom six even stronger, or the top six, and maybe Brian Little is a third-line center. You know, there's things that you could do with that team if you wanted to package up some of your assets. And I think people are going to be, certainly fans are going to be expecting that if this looks like a team that could take a playoff run, that they're going to do something like that. But there's not a lot of weaknesses right now with this team. So I think they're pretty happy with the depth. And I think that obviously Kevin Cheveliaf will look and see what's out there and keep an eye on it. But we all know from his history that he's not a guy who jumps into trades very easily.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline by Winnipeg Sun sports editor Ted Wyman. Ted, we wanted to ask you about the Jets' third line of Andrew Kopp, Brandon Tanev, and Adam Lowry. Tuesday night against Nashville, that was arguably their best game as a line. Obviously, Brandon Tanev gets the game-winning goal. Lowry had a couple of points. Tanev had a couple of points. Didn't get on the score sheet Thursday night against the Boston Bruins, but what have you seen out of this line that makes you think that this is a bona fide third line and that this line is really a key part of the Jets' success right now?
Well, I think Adam Lowry has evolved into a really excellent checking center. He's the guy that Maurice wants out there all the time against top guys, taking big face-offs for them, big, strong guy. And when they contribute, I talked to Lowry about this the other day, when they contribute, it's like such a huge bonus. When they contribute on the score sheet, I should say, it's just a huge bonus for the team. It's like, they know that they have one of the best top sixes in the NHL, and they know that those guys are going to be good for a goal or two or three a game. So when the third line and the fourth line are putting pucks in the net, they just think, wow, this is going to give us a great chance to win. And Lowry scored the first goal of the game twice in the last week, and Tanev gets the game winner. That's a tremendous contribution from that line. And I think the fourth line has also contributed quite well, maybe not as much lately, but if you looked at the stat sheet in terms of Corsi and whatnot in the last game, the fourth line actually was much stronger than the third line. Lowry's line didn't generate much at all offensively, but that's not going to be their role every night. That's the shutdown line on this team. And you can see how much faith Paul Maurice has in them because they're often out there at the end of games when it's close or when they're protecting a lead. And that says a lot. That speaks volumes, in my opinion.
You can hear him later today on the Manitoba Building Trades Jets pregame show. He's a very good friend of the program. Ted Wyman, thank you very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Enjoy the game this afternoon between the Jets and Islanders at noon.
Will do. Always a pleasure, guys.
Thanks, all right, Ted. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Same to you guys.
All right, let's head to break, Dave. When we come back, we're going to talk about the surging Edmonton Oilers. They've won three games in a row. I want to know, Dave, if you think that the Oilers can still make the playoffs. You're listening to the IC Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 12.
Another shot for Pizzetto. A chance, but finally the hard work of Jesse Puljujärvi pays off. And the Oilers have six goals on the night.
Big thanks to Teddy Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. That's me. Drew usually reads this read, so that's why I'm saying it's me. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, just like mine, Dave, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. I guess people could figure it out that Drew's away from the show this week.
Well, they hear a manly voice, and that's obviously not Drew's.
Yeah, exactly.
They hear a guy who...
Very manly voice.
A guy who's...
A man's man, right, Dave?
You are a man's man.
Yeah.
You're a husky guy.
Yeah.
Know how to fish.
Ripped.
Oh, extremely ripped.
Yeah, Drew's in Kentucky with his family, so happy holidays to the entire Mendel family. Drew, of course, will be back after the January break. Yeah, I guess December break.
We're taking a bit of a break.
Yeah, we're taking a bit of a break. This is actually the last IC of 2017, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's a nice little celebration.
Yeah, we're off next week, December 30th, but we'll be back, of course, 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, January 6th. Dave, I want to talk about the Edmonton Oilers this segment. And, you know, the Edmonton Oilers, let's be honest, have been written off by many this year. They're still second last in the Western Conference. They've got a record of 16-17-2. They've got 34 points. And they've still got a ways to go here before they get back into the playoff race. Right now, with those 34 points, they are, I believe, 6 points behind Chicago for that last wildcard spot, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right.
6 points behind Chicago. Five points behind Chicago. And they've won those three games. And you look at who's been scoring, and that's what I find the most fascinating about this recent run by the Oilers. They've won three games in a row. Most recently, they helped the Jets out, by the way, on Thursday night by beating the St. Louis Blues by a score of 3-2. They've actually won four of their last five games. And in those three wins, Dave, we mentioned, over St. Louis, San Jose, and Minnesota, the Oilers have scored 11 goals by nine different players. So you're thinking, okay, well, the Oilers have won their last three games, four of their last five. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are getting all the goals. Not the case. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has 2 goals. Ryan Strome has 2 goals. Both of those goals by Strome, by the way, were against San Jose. So the Oilers are getting goals from a variety of characters, including Milan Lucic, Patrick Maroon, Drake Kajula, including, you know, obviously, you know, Connor McDavid had the big assist. The big goal against the St. Louis Blues. But my question for you, Dave, is being 5 points behind that last wild card spot in the West, is it too late right now for the Oilers to make a run? Or with all of the talent that they have, we talked about it, Connor McDavid, arguably the best player in the world, Leon Draisaitl, former second overall pick. Can this team still make the playoffs, or is it already too late?
You know what? I don't like to write off any team. I know that mathematically, especially, we always talk about it, the Thanksgiving break is when, you know, if the team is above the playoff line, then they have a very good chance of being in the playoffs, which Jets fans are happy about because the team was above it. But, you know, when you have Connor McDavid on your team, then you're really, you can't ever rule out that team. It's the same with like a Sidney Crosby. You have these players, you can put their teams on their back and seemingly will them into the playoffs. Now, having said that, this is a team game, and hockey is a game where an individual can't single-handedly generally do that. So, I mean, I know those are contradictory statements, but I think if anybody could do it, it's a Connor McDavid-type player. But at the same time, you know, especially from the Oilers' perspective, I mean, they've given up, I think they're the second or third most goals against in the Western Conference, and that's just a stat that kind of is standing out at me right now because, you know, if you don't have the goaltending to back up the play, then you know, Jets fans saw that, and that was a collective team effort last year with not just on the goaltending, but it was a collective defensive commitment to defense. If the Oilers are willing to commit to that more, and we've seen that more recently, then maybe they have a chance to kind of sneak their way back in. And the one thing that's probably going for them is the fact that the Central all seems to be murdering each other. You know, Minnesota beats Chicago. And there aren't, and again, I don't know this statistically, but it just doesn't seem like there's as many overtime and 3-point games as we're used to seeing. Now, I don't know that 100%, but it just seems like that at this point right now, there haven't been as many three point games. So the fact is, mathematically, they're really not out of it, especially if they go on a run. Now, the question is about sustainability, because, you know, as we've talked about, like Ted was talking about, the toll that these games take on these teams. We see it with the Jets. They play these heavy games. They play these hard games. Especially in the West, they're taxing on the teams. And so, you know, you're not going to be able to sustain a run. That's the reason why we talk about how important it is to bank points early in the season so you can have a 1 or 2 game losing streak and afford it. And the Oilers are one of those teams now that really don't have the ability to have a 2 or 3 games off where they only maybe have one, you know, extra time loss and, you know, a couple of regulation losses. You can't really afford to do that because you're trying so hard to catch these teams. So do I think it's impossible? No, but I think they have to play a very high level of hockey pretty much till the end of the season.
And Dave, you mentioned the defense, and they're getting healthier. Andre Sequeira returned to the lineup on Thursday night. He missed the first 34 games of the season, and he's a top four defenseman for them. And he started off on the third pair, but we know that he's going to be in the top four. He's an excellent defenseman, veteran defenseman, blocks a lot of shots, physical guy, can contribute offensively. And, you know, the Jets have two games coming up against the Oilers, and that's why I wanted to bring up the Oilers. The Jets play the Oilers in Winnipeg next Wednesday, December 27th, and then they're in Edmonton on New Year's Eve for the New Year's Eve game. So those are going to be crucial games for the Oilers trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Oilers have a huge game tonight against the Montreal Canadiens, who have lost their last two games. And you saw, you know, that little skirmish in practice between Andrew Shaw and Joe Morrow. So the Montreal Canadiens are going to be a desperate team. They're currently 4 points behind the Islanders for that last wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. Pardon me, the Habs have won two in a row, not lost two in a row. But needless to say, you know, there's a bunch of teams, Dave, in front of the Canadiens right now. Philadelphia, Carolina, Pittsburgh. In Pittsburgh, it's hard to believe. We talked about this on the Wednesday show, but they're not in a playoff spot right now. So that's a big game tonight for the Oilers against the Habs. And then obviously the two games back-to-back against the Jets are going to be huge. The Jets do have a game against the Islanders between those two games, but you know, Jets fans are going to see a lot of the Oilers coming up here at the end of the month, and I agree with you. I mean, I don't think you can write this team off yet, but I think that these next three games are going to be absolutely huge, and you really can't take your foot off of the gas if you're the Oilers. I mean, you have to go on a run. You can't just win three games in a row, Dave. You have to win five, six, seven games in a row because, as you mentioned, I mean, there's a good chance that five teams from the Central make it this year. It's clearly a better division than the Pacific. I mean, you've got Vegas and LA right now leading that Pacific division. But after that, I mean, Anaheim's still trying to stay relevant. You've got Calgary in the mix. So it's not going to be easy for the Oilers, especially now that the Ducks are getting healthy with Ryan Getzlaff already back in the lineup. Ryan Kesler will soon be back in the lineup. So nice to see the Oilers doing better, but they've got a long way to go. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to continue to preview this afternoon's Jets-Islanders game with Andy Graziano. He's a writer for Sportsnet New York, and he's the host of the Secondary Assist podcast. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Love coming back with the foo, Dave. It's an Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day puck drop, noon Central Time on TSN 1290. Huss and Rick, no, I keep saying that. Huss is on vacation. Actually in Vegas. It's going to be Darren Bauman and Rick coming up at 9 o'clock after us with the afternoon drive, which is really the morning drive.
Yeah, at this point it's the morning drive.
When it's this early. And then, of course, the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show starts at 11 o'clock with Kevin Owen Friends. We're trying to get Andy Graziano on the line to talk about the New York Islanders, a very good New York Islanders team, Dave, that right now is holding down that last wild card spot, 2 points behind the New York Rangers and 1 point up on the Pittsburgh Penguins. We've got Andy on the line. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
He's a New York Islanders writer for Sportsnet New York, and he's the host of the Secondary Assist podcast. Andy Graziano, thank you very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Good morning, guys. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're doing well. By the way, I got to say, Andy, I love the name of that podcast, the Secondary Assist podcast. I'm not even going to ask you what you think about Secondary Assists.
Yeah, it's something that kind of we got from the famous hashtag Isles Twitter. It kind of gave myself and Shane Blackburn, who's a producer over at SiriusXM, all the inspiration that we needed. It's pretty much named after our Josh Bailey, who seems to get a lot of hate for his knack for putting up tons of secondary assists, which fans, some fans anyway, don't seem to think count as much in the. But hey, a point's a point, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Jets captain Blake Wheeler is going to not have a problem with that because he only gets primary assists, right? So
exactly.
He's going to love that name. Andy, we want to start off by talking about a tweet that you just put out. Islanders defenseman Calvin DeHaan is expected to miss the remainder of the season after opting for shoulder surgery. I mean, how devastating is that for the Islanders, and how are they going to replace Calvin DeHaan in the lineup?
It's pretty big, actually. You know, Calvin DeHaan's pretty significant minute eater for the Islanders, you know, getting anywhere between 18 and 20 minutes a night, playing top four. Blocks a ton of shots, obviously. So they're gonna miss his presence, and with the team struggling mightily defensively, as I'm sure you've seen, it's going to be a big loss. I think that right now they're planning on going with the seven that they have currently. I don't see any call-ups in the near future of a Devin Toews or a Sebastian Aho. I think they kind of prefer them to continue developing down at Bridgeport. So right now it's pretty much going to be the seven that they have. They're probably going to rotate in Thomas Hickey and Dennis Seidenberg in that sixth spot and hope for the continued development of Adam Pellick, Scott Mayfield, guys like that, to kind of step up and eat some of those minutes that they're going to lose with DeHaan. It's a pretty significant loss, not just for the team, but for DeHaan personally as he's entering unrestricted free agency next summer.
You know, Andy, speaking of defensemen, Ryan Pollock, of course, from Manitoba, he's gone into 22 games this year. I know that he's been scratched for some of those games, but how would you assess the way he's played here in his second NHL season?
I think he's playing very well. You know, I think we've seen that defensemen in the NHL take a little bit longer to develop than forwards. It's a very tough position to learn. Pollock's been brought along slowly by the Islanders. Let's face it, he hasn't been kind of thrust into the role that Josh Bailey was 10 seasons ago when the team was so bad that they kind of had to force him in there and feed him minutes. I think he's come along nicer than a lot of us have expected, especially from the defensive aspect. You know, he's playing pretty well in his own zone, which I think is key for Doug Wade, obviously. And offensively, he's starting to get a little more confidence, starting to jump up into play more, starting to generate offense. I think we'd like to see him get his heavy shot off more often. And I think I spoke to him a couple weeks ago about that, and he even admitted that that's the part of the game for him that's coming along a little slower than he'd like. He'd like to work on getting more of his shots through to the net. He doesn't feel that he's doing a good enough job there. But defensively, he's feeling very comfortable, game by game, getting better and better. And I think he's going to pay big dividends, especially combining with Mayfield and Pellick to eat up some of those minutes that the Islanders just lost with DeHaan's injury.
You know, Andy, I know the announcement about the arena in Belmont Park came out a little while ago, but you know, how excited are fans on Long Island? It feels like they're kind of getting their team back from Brooklyn. How excited is the fan base out in Long Island to be getting a team? I mean, again, we don't here in Winnipeg don't necessarily know the logistics of where Belmont is relative to where Nassau Coliseum was, but do they feel like they're getting their team back from downtown New York?
Yeah, I think they're obviously ecstatic, over the moon excited about this whole development with Belmont. I think it's a long time coming. You know, John Ledecky and Scott Malkin have combined forces to give the Islanders stable ownership, which is something that we haven't been able to say for a long, long time. And the Islander fan base is a very passionate one. Obviously, they're a small one, and the majority of them are on Long Island, so they definitely feel as if they're getting their team back, per se. Belmont is only about 13 or so miles west of where the Nassau Coliseum sat. So, again, fans out there are super excited for it. The whole question for the team, they're committed to playing in Brooklyn, obviously, the rest of this year and next year. After that, it gets a little hazy as to where they're going to be in the interim until the Belmont Arena is officially finished and they can move in there. I'm thinking that's probably 3 years away aggressively. So they're going to need like a one-year possible bridge to get to Belmont. And there's been talks of possibly playing at the recently renovated Nassau Coliseum in that time frame. The NHL will not approve a long-term move back to the Coliseum, obviously, but Bill Daly did say yesterday that a one-year bridge to Belmont would be possible. So the team, the fans out there could look to get their team back a little earlier. The Belmont building doesn't necessarily have to be put up for them to get their team back.
No, Andy, the part of getting this big arena and kind of stabilizing everything is the fact that, you know, John Tavares and what's going to happen with his contract. How much more likely do you think we are to see him sign with the Islanders long-term now that this arena deal is in place?
It's actually the first question we asked them coming out of the game the other night, which happened to be right after the Belmont announcement. And if there's one thing that every hockey fan knows about John Tavares is, you know, he knows how to work us. He knows how to work the media for sure. He doesn't really give us much insight into what he's thinking. He's very calculated in his answers, very straightforward. Him and Pat Brisson obviously have been keeping an open dialogue with Garth Snow through this whole process. I think that Garth knows obviously a lot more than we're being led on to believe in terms of where those talks are going. I feel that money and term are definitely not going to be an issue. The money is there, especially with the cap going up next season. The term is going to be there. The Islanders are going to offer them a max deal. That's without a question. And so it's going to all be up to Tavares and Brisson to decide if this is where they want to hang their hat for the next 8 years. You know, John's going to be getting married, so he obviously has that consideration as well to discuss with his future wife at home in terms of if this is the place they want to settle. But John has always maintained that this is an organization that he loves. Long Island is a place that he loves living, with a practice rink 5 minutes away from his home and now a new arena going up 13 miles from his home. I think it definitely helps. But he did tell us the other night that this decision on Belmont will not be the ultimate deciding factor. It's part of a bigger picture, but it will not be the ultimate deciding factor and will not sway his decision one way or the other. I personally was at about 65% that he was going to re-sign, obviously leaving some room for the worst-case scenario. But I think with Belmont, that probably pushes me up into the 85 to 90% range that he will remain with Islander long-term.
We're joined by Andy Graziano, New York Islanders writer for Sportsnet New York and host of the Secondary Assist podcast. Andy, we have to ask you about former Jets captain Andrew Ladd. He picked up a goal on Thursday night against the Anaheim Ducks. It looked like that might stand up as the winning goal. He's got 9 goals on the year. Recently, he's been playing on that second line with super rookie Matthew Barzal and Jordan Eberle, ex of the Edmonton Oilers. In your opinion, does Ladd look much more comfortable this year in his second year with the Isles?
Absolutely. You know, him and his family have kind of settled in nicely. And on that second line has been just a revelation. You know, at the beginning of the year, when the Islanders over the summer acquired Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strome, everyone kind of assumed that, hey, you know, here's finally that winger for Tavares that everybody says he needs. He's going to slot right into that first line. It just didn't work initially. You know, it just didn't look right. They didn't look comfortable with each other. That's when head coach Doug Waite made the switch and created that second line of Barzal, Eberle, and Ladd, and they have just taken off. They really play off each other nicely, right? Because you have the finesse play of Eberle, you have Barzal, who's been a revelation in his rookie season with all the dynamic stick handling and puck work that he could do, and then you have Ladd, who's kind of the up-and-down grinder, works the boards well, goes in front of the net like Anders Lee. And Ladd last year was battling a back injury first half of the season. And it affected his play a lot. I think that plus the pressure of the contract kind of got to him a little bit. This year he looks 10 times more comfortable. He's back to the player that we thought we were getting, that we expected to be getting, skating more loose, looking more comfortable out there, and definitely fitting in nicely on that line.
You know, Andy, the Islanders have shown a propensity for putting the puck in the net, but they've also allowed the puck to go in, I think, more than anyone else in the NHL this season. You know, is that symptomatic of the defense, the team, collective team defense, or is it the goaltending, or both?
I think it's a combination of both, unfortunately. You know, goaltenders, guys, we've seen have down years, right? And we see it all the time. We saw one a couple of years ago from Henrik Lundqvist, who's arguably a future Hall of Famer. I don't even know if arguably anymore, to be honest with you. But I think this year the Islanders are definitely suffering through defensive lapses, especially in the slot area. There's just guys uncovered consistently. You pair that with the goaltending, which lets in probably 1 to 2 soft goals per game. We call them low danger, you know, opportunities going in, and it's just a recipe for disaster. If you look at the advanced stats, right, you look at Yaroslav Halak, for instance, his 5-on-5 low danger save percentage ranks 26th of 30 qualified goalies with over 700 minutes played. And that's, I think, a really, really telling stat, because those are the shots off the boards, the unscreened shots from the circles. You need a save. At the end of the day, you need a save. And when you're a team like the Islanders, they're second in goals for behind only Tampa, 30th in goals against, and that's only Arizona's worse, and Arizona's played 2 more games, 31st on the penalty kill, 26th in faceoffs. And now you have the Jets coming in, who are right behind the Islanders in goals for, with 3 guys over 15 goals. And it's a recipe for what should be an exciting game today, to be honest with you. The Jets are going to definitely get their opportunities, that's for sure. But I think the Islanders have to tighten up in the defensive end, or it's going to be really, really tough to make the playoffs with the system that they're playing. They're an attacking team, but they attack so much that the forwards are flying out of the zone too early. It's going to be hard for Doug Waite. He's almost going to have to try to 30, 35 games in, switch their mentality, maybe get them playing a little more defense first and having them think that defense will lead to offense instead of vice versa.
Andy, have the Islanders announced who's going to start in goal today? Is it going to be Yaroslav Halak?
They have not announced it officially yet. Doug Wade will be speaking at about 10 to 11 this morning, so in about an hour and a half time. I believe he'll probably go back to Halak. The game in Anaheim the other night, again, three goals against where just defensive breakdowns, guys left all alone in front of the net, at the side of the net. Scott Mayfield on one play was 1-on-3 in the low slot. I mean, those are just opportunities that any goaltender would have a hard time stopping. The other two goals, again, questionable. Low danger saves that Yaroslav Halak needs to make, especially the goal by Lindholm in overtime. It's an unscreened shot from the top of the circle that, every now and then you need to save. But I think they're likely to go back to Halak today, but we'll find out officially in about an hour and a half.
Andy, we talked about John Tavares earlier, and everyone knows, or at least everyone who watches the Islanders and hockey knows, that John Tavares is arguably a top 10 center in the NHL, maybe even a top 3 center, depending on who you ask. And it's no surprise that he's tied for second in the NHL in scoring right now with 45 points. But Josh Bailey is also tied for second in the NHL in points right now. He's got 10 goals and 35 assists. And when you consider that his breakout season was last year, do you think he's still underrated in the NHL for what he's doing right now on that top line for the Isles?
Absolutely underrated. Josh Bailey, a lot of people around the Islanders' social media talk are pointing to the contract year. Oh, well, he's just playing well because he's in his contract year, and last year he was leading up to that. Now this year he's just exploded out of the gate. I think it's a chemistry, right? It's just a chemistry, which is very underrated, that he has with John Tavares. And John Tavares, I spoke to John back in February of this year about that. And he turned around and told me that flat out he requested that Josh Bailey play on his line. This is chemistry that's been kind of building there the last couple of years. John didn't request Anders Lee. That just happened to work out great for New York in terms of that dominant first line. But he specifically requested Josh Bailey. And Josh Bailey is a heck of a hockey player. He's a lot better than people give him credit for on the defensive end, more so. And I think when you're looking at a team that's struggling so badly in their defensive zone like the Islanders are, that's the kind of player that you need. That's the kind of player that you want. And to put him on that line with Tavares and Lee, where it can kind of allow those guys to do their thing and dominate and cycle down in the offensive zone, is critical. And on the offensive end, his passing is second to none. I'll tell you, on this team, he is the top setup guy. And whether it's his contract year or not, when you're talking about being tied with John Tavares, the Islanders have two of the top five point getters in the NHL, trailing only Nikita Kucherov of Tampa. And if you would have asked anybody at the beginning of the season, would Josh Bailey be tied with Steven Stamkos in points at this point in the season, they would have probably had you sent to an institution immediately. But he's really come along nicely, and it just so happens that in his 10th season, he's working up to a unrestricted free agency in the summer. And look, he's going to get paid. If you look at the comparables around the league, he's probably inching his way up into that $5.5 to $6 million range as we speak.
Great to see for the former member of the Windsor Spitfires, Andy Graziano. He's a New York Islanders writer for Sportsnet New York and host of the Secondary Assist podcast. Love that name. Andy, thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you so much, guys. Enjoy the game today.
All right. Happy holidays, Andy. Enjoy the game this afternoon.
You too.
All right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Dave Austin Matthews.
Oh, okay.
He might come back today, tonight, against the New York Rangers. He was back practicing yesterday. We'll talk about the former first overall pick back in 2016. You might know him. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets game day, puck drop, live from Brooklyn, noon today. Sorry, I'm panting a little bit because I went to warm up my coffee.
That was stressful. I thought I was going to have to do a monologue there.
That was a bit of a quick break there, Dave.
Well, Rory wanted to keep you on your toes.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the IC Sandwich. I had one of those yesterday. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
You're panting. That was a big run.
Yeah, I'm not in the same shape that I used to be, Dave.
Well, you know what? I was just going to talk about the Moose for the next 10 minutes while I was waiting for you.
We will talk about the Moose in the final segment. They won again last night. They swept the San Antonio Rampage out of town.
They did.
Now first place in the American Hockey League.
They are. They took over from Toronto last week, and they haven't looked back.
And Jack Roslovic, first in AHL scoring.
Correct.
He's not tied anymore.
He's no longer tied.
Dave, Austin Matthews returned to practice yesterday. We still don't know, by the way, if Matthews is going to play tonight against the New York Rangers. Right. But there's a good chance that he plays because he wasn't in a non-contact jersey. He was in a regular practice jersey. He's missed the last six games with a concussion. And we knew that there was a good chance that it was a concussion. But earlier this week, he announced to the assembled media that he officially had a concussion and the speculation was over. Mike Babcock, the Toronto Maple Leafs management group, they never wanted to admit that he had a concussion. Now, the Leafs have gone 2-4-0 in their last six games, so they've missed Austin Matthews. I want to throw here to a clip of Darren Dreger. This is Dreger on Overdrive on TSN 1050 on Thursday talking about the Matthews injury situation.
You know, they have a practice scheduled, I believe, for tomorrow.
10 a.m.
So if Matthews is on the ice in a full practice, then I'd be surprised if he didn't play on Saturday. I mean, he's been eager to get back into the lineup. And look, we may never know the specifics to the injuries, not just one, but others. And I think the medical department, rightly so, is being overly cautious. You know, if there's 10 games left in the regular season, there's something on the line, or you want to prep him to get ready for the playoffs, I think he's been in the lineup and played a couple of games by now. I was told he was looking. He wanted to play on Tuesday.
Tuesday, the afternoon game, yeah.
And, you know, medically. And you could see, you know, Babcock is growing frustrated. He just, you know, blows it off on the medical people, which is great. That's fine. If they're making the call, which they are, then you live by that call. I think that they're being overcautious because whatever he had that took him out of the lineup earlier in the year is still nagging. There was still something lingering there. So why not sit him for a few more days, week, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is, and try and get it as cleared up as best you can.
That was Dregs on TSN 1050 on Thursday talking about Austin Matthews. He was obviously referencing yesterday's practice. So Austin Matthews, as we mentioned earlier, he was back on the ice, Dave. So you think that he's back in the lineup tonight, but I guess there's always the chance that if he isn't ready to go, he won't be in the lineup. I guess my question for you, though, Dave, is why bring him back with one game left before the Christmas break? Just because he's ready to play? Or is it more so maybe because Austin Matthews wanted to come back earlier in the week? I guess, isn't there a benefit just to letting him sit out tonight's game and give him some extra time heading into the Christmas break?
Yeah, I have a tendency to be risk averse with health, and I think to me, especially with a player that's such a prized asset like a Austin Matthews, I don't see the need to rush him back for one game. Like, obviously, you don't want to be heading into the break with on a skid, which, you know, obviously Toronto is in a bit of one right now, 5-5 in the last 10 games, but I just think, like, especially with a concussion, although it's funny because that's the one injury that Coach Maurice here in Winnipeg is willing to disclose. He won't talk about, like, despite, unlike Ken Hitchcock in Dallas, who's willing to say exactly what the injury is. Paul Maurice will disclose when, in fact, it is a concussion. The Leafs, for whatever reason, think that they have to be the most tight-lipped organization in sports, so they don't disclose what those injuries are, and that's their prerogative. That's what they choose. But me personally, I don't understand why you would rush a player back for one game. And it's similar, I think it was Brian Little. I remember there was a similar situation when he was coming back off an injury. And you thought to yourself, does he need to get into this game? Because the Jets were going to have a bit of I think it was a similar sort of situation where the Jets were going to have some time before they would, like about a 10-day span where they weren't playing. So I thought, well, you know, you give that player that time to heal up versus rushing him back in to play in one game and then potentially having him be injured again. So me, I have a tendency to take more of a long-term look at these types of injuries, especially with a concussion and a young player. You just don't want to risk it. I mean, you don't want to risk anybody's health. It doesn't matter what their level of importance to the organization is. But at the same time, you know, you can't fail to acknowledge that Austin Matthews is the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so to me, you sit him one more game, you give him that extra week off of playing and potential for re-injury, and then he comes back off the break healthy and feeling good.
Yeah, and we shall see, but it looks like there's a good chance that he plays tonight for the Leafs, Dave, and it was 2 weeks ago back on Saturday, December 9th, against the Pittsburgh Penguins, where Austin Matthews collided with Morgan Rielly, and at the time, everyone was worried about the concussion. You know, you mentioned that teams rarely like to disclose injuries, Dave, mm-hmm. and I thought it was kind of refreshing that the player himself admitted that he suffered a concussion, right? Like, how often do you see players or hear players, you know, admit that they're dealing with a concussion? Because many times the team's policy is to not disclose injury. That's why we see upper body, mid body, lower body, everything like that. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Austin Matthews plays tonight. He's missed the last six games. And as we mentioned, the Leafs have only won two of those six games. We're going to head to break now, Dave. When we come back, we're going to be joined by TSN reporter Mark Masters, hashtag Masters Nation, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to talk about the 2018 World Juniors. They kick off on Boxing Day in Buffalo, New York. You're listening to the IC Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve. We're live on TSN 1290. We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, Drew Mandel is off on vacation. He'll be back in January. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by TSN's Mark Masters, hashtag Masters Nation, to preview the 2018 World Junior Hockey Championship. Mark, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. So Canada defeated Switzerland 8-1 last night to close out the pre-competition games. They won their first game 9-0 over the Czech Republic. What did we learn about this team in these first two pre-competition games?
It's hard to know. I was just talking with this with some other reporters after the game, is how much do we read into these results? Clearly the Czechs and the Swiss are in the other group. They are on the lower end of the other group. The Czechs didn't play some of their better players. It was their first game in North America, adjusting to the smaller ice, all that. That said, I think we learned that maybe scoring won't be as big an issue as everyone is anticipating. You know, the big concern, I guess, after the selection camp wrapped up was, okay, on paper, these guys have great numbers. But is there the game breaker? Is there the high draft pick? Is there a line that you think is going to be able to take over the tournament? And maybe there isn't. And head coach Dominic Ducharme said, you know, we're going to score by committee. Every line's going to be able to attack. And so far that's been prophetic. That worked out in the first two pre-tournament games. You know, the Robert Thomas line, Taylor Radish, Boris Kachuk played really well in the first pre-tournament game. And then Dylan Dubé returned to the lineup and was flying with Sam Steele and Jordan Kyrou. So, you know, maybe they're going to be all right. Maybe this is going to work out. One thing I think we did learn for sure is this defense can fly, and they aren't going to hesitate to jump into the rush. And I think that's important because I think that's a key part of the identity of this team and might be the reason they win. And then I guess the other thing we learned is Carter Hart is the Carter Hart that's played in the WHL this season, and that's good news for Team Canada.
Mark, we wanted to ask you about the lone Manitoban on the team. That's, of course, Brett Howden from Oak Bank, Manitoba. He was centering that fourth line last night with Max Comtois and Alex Formenton of the London Knights, Ottawa Senators draft pick. Are you expecting Brett Howden to stay centering that fourth line? And what is Dominic Ducharme expecting Howden's role to be on this team?
I think he's going to stay right there. I think they love him in that 4C role. He's got that edge. He's got that skilled upside if they need it. That line was really good. That line kind of started things off against the Czechs on Wednesday, got the ball rolling, and then last night I thought they were also very effective. Formenton on with a lot of energy, Comtois all over the place. So it's funny to think that when it comes to like the 13th forward, it's more Batherson and Steenbergen on the bubble and terms of rotating on the right wing of the third line. I think Coach Ducharme really likes his, if you want to call it the fourth line, with Hout in there in the middle. I think that he brings a presence to the ice. I noticed that line pretty much every shift they took for positive reasons, and they're a line that could see a lot of ice late in games where Canada's protecting a lead. So I think, you know, this isn't going to be a normal fourth line. I think that it's a line that Dominic Ducharme is going to trust, and a lot of that has to do with Brett Howden.
You know, Mark, you mentioned Drake Batherson, and he's a player that is not that high-end name necessarily of, like some of the other players, but he's just such a good, such a feel-good story right now. Are a lot of players kind of happy for the success he's had on making the team?
I don't know how you can't be. I mean, a guy who was passed over in his first year of eligibility for the QMJHL draft, when he was only 5'5", and then he had a big growth spurt, but still was kind of behind the eight ball, didn't get drafted in his first year of eligibility in the NHL, fourth rounder to the Senators, wasn't invited to the summer camp, starts the season flying in Cape Breton, leads the queue before all of a sudden he gets slashed on the hand, fractures of fingers, pinky fingers similar to the Mark Methot injury, although not quite as bad, works his way back, he played really well in the QMJHL game against the Russians, CIBC Super Series, so it's hard not to cheer for a guy like that. You know, he almost gave up on hockey after he got passed over in the Q draft. He was quite a good golfer, provincial champion. He considered following that, but his dad played hockey growing up, actually professional in Germany and in Indiana, where Drake was born. So, you know, he stuck with it, and it's turned out pretty darn good, and it looks like the Senators got a bit of a diamond in the rough. For someone to be passed over and then be a fourth-round pick in Big Team Canada, it's a nice story.
Mark Masters, TSN reporter and obviously the leader of Masters Nation, joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Mark, wanted to ask you about Dante Fabbro, obviously a top prospect in the Nashville Predators system. He's playing American college hockey right now. He's injured. Are you expecting him to be healthy for Canada's first game against Finland on Boxing Day? And if he isn't healthy, I guess that means that Josh Mahura is the seventh defenseman then?
Yeah, Josh Mahura, who, by the way, looked great last night, and I think has handled himself with tremendous class this entire week, would fill in if Fabbro or Connor Timmins is unable to go for the World Juniors. Timmins missed last night's game, blocked a shot off his hand. Now, with both of the guys, Fabbro and Timmins, Team Canada is sounding optimistic right now, which has changed a bit when it comes to Fabbro. When it first initially came out, he was that he was more seriously hurt than expected. He was in a walking boot at the beginning of the week, and there was talk about how emotional he was and how his their thoughts were with his family at the time. So it seems as if he's made some progress. Now, we haven't seen him on the ice since a week ago Friday in the last selection camp game against Denmark, when he left midway through the third period and appeared to be in great pain and limped down the runway to the dressing room and didn't return. So, I do wonder what shape he's going to be in when he returns to the lineup, assuming he'll be okay. Now, you know, Coach Ducharme said he expects a decision by Christmas Day or even the morning of Boxing Day, which, of course, they play their first game. It's worth noting they don't necessarily have to make a decision by then. They could decide, you know, Dante just needs another day. He can't play against Finland, but if we hold him, he'll be ready for that outdoor game on the 29th. He has to miss the first two games. And you just leave a spot open. You just don't register anyone. You keep Mahura here, and you wait, and then you make a decision a few days into the tournament. Teams have done that in the past as they waited for injuries. It happens all the time at the senior world where, you know, teams add NHLers who get eliminated later in the tournament all the time. So that's an option available to them. They don't think they're going to need to use that, but we'll see. It's definitely coming down to the wire when it comes to Dante Fabbro.
You know, Mark, Dave asked you about Drake Batherson and how great of a story that has been. But what about, you know, Josh Mahura? He gets cut last week. And then, as you mentioned, it's possible that he plays on Boxing Day against Finland. So even though, you know, Josh Mahura might not end up playing the whole tournament, how great of a story has that been? And even when Dante Fabbro comes back, is it the understanding that Josh Mahura is still going to stick around with Team Canada and maybe not play games but still be around the group?
I haven't heard about that. That would be really tough, I would think. Just emotionally, what a roller coaster. So it was a week ago today, that he flew home to or flew back to Regina and played in the WHL, and he had been cut a week ago yesterday. And after that game in the WHL, he was approached by John Paddock and his coach in Regina and says, "Hey, they want you back." Apparently, Dante Fabbro is more injured than expected, and they'd like you to come back as an insurance policy. And I know, you know, on paper that, you know, seems like an easy decision. Oh, of course you'll go back. But when someone's just crushed your dream, and now they want you to come back with the potential of being crushed again, I don't know. It's really tough. Obviously, you do it. You put yourself in a position to play for Team Canada. You do everything possible to do it. He's been smiling. He's been at all the activities. I think he's played really well. I can't say enough about this guy. He was saying that the turnaround was so fast. He still hasn't done his laundry yet, so he's a little bit, I guess, you know, doing the old inside out rule with some of the undergarments. So, you know, it's been a tough go for sure. I don't know if he'd stick around. He's been a great influence, I think, on the team from what I've been able to see. I can imagine that being very tough, but the defense is a strength of this year's Team Canada. A very difficult group to make, with three returning guys, assuming Favreau's back, with Cale Clegg and Jake Bean, plus Victor Mete from the NHL. I mean, you know, Mara's about to be sitting there thinking, geez, if Mete hadn't gotten loaned, if Favreau doesn't get healthy, I'm there. But, you know, I still think, despite it all, he's been a feel-good story.
You know, Mark, the headlines have been screaming, Canada seeks revenge on American ice. And, you know, everybody expects, you know, we at least hope or expect a Canada-U.S. final. Are the players able, though, to stay in the moment, not look too far ahead? Are they not talking about already the gold medal game? Are they focusing on the present right now?
They better not. Finland's really good. I mean, Finland might be, you know, just as good as the Americans. You know, they got, what, 5 first-rounders on the blue line, mm-hmm. ice skating and all that. So, I think they're doing a good job. The times of Canada, you know, waltzing through this tournament are long gone. Just the one gold in the last 8 years. They, you know, are only a couple of years removed from, you know, Canada finishing 6th in Helsinki. So they'll be ready to go on Boxing Day. This Finland game is going to be awesome. This group is really tough that Canada's in. The U.S., Finland, and Canada could all win gold medals. Gold medals at this event, there's no question in my mind. The Finns are going to be out to avenge last year's 9th. You know, Canada wants to get revenge. Finland finished 9th last year. There's a lot of motivation there to come back and avenge that. It's a very proud nation. They've won a couple gold medals in recent years. The Americans playing on home ice as the defending champions, a lot of high-end talent. And then, of course, Canada, you know, might have the best goalie and the deepest group. So, you know, I think it's going to be a tremendous preliminary round competition between those three. You do not want to finish 3rd in the pool, because then you're going to cross over and probably play one of Russia or Sweden, whoever's the runner-up in the other pool, and that would be by far the tougher quarterfinal that you would face in the crossover. So there's going to be no rest for Canada, and it's a tough schedule. They play 4 and 5 nights. I cannot remember a tough schedule like this for Canada, because they usually play on New Year's Eve, which they won't this year, and you got an outdoor game with the U.S. Kind of mixed in there, which can be very emotionally draining as well. So it's not going to be easy this year's World Juniors for Canada.
Yeah, Mark, it seems like every year on New Year's Eve, you're just expecting it to be Canada versus the U.S. I wanted to ask you about Team Sweden, because you just mentioned them, and it was announced earlier this week that the Buffalo Sabres were going to allow Alex Nylander to play for Sweden, and we already know that Swedish roster is absolutely stacked with Leafs draft pick Timothy Liljegren, 2018 projected first overall pick Rasmus Dahlin, Elias Pettersson is a first-round pick of the Vancouver Canucks, Elias Andersson, first-round pick of the New York Rangers. Is Sweden maybe a dark horse to win this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say, you know, many times you list them as a favorite, but for whatever, they've won 40 straight preliminary round games. So that's 10 years they haven't lost in the round robin. It's insane. And obviously we know Dominic Ducharme's comment last year where he kind of took a shot at them before the semifinal and said, yeah, they're really good in the preliminary round, and then they find ways to lose when things get tougher, it gets tougher for them. So they got a bit to prove when it comes to the nitty-gritty of this tournament. I know Alexander Nylander, as someone who's been a part of the group the last couple of years, is going to be ultra motivated to, you know, get his career kind of jump-started too, because it hasn't gone quite the way he's wanted down in Rochester and with the Sabres organization. And I know the Swedes just in general are going to be super, super motivated to come back and kind of turn some of their preliminary round success into a gold medal, because they certainly have the talent to do it. You just listed out all the names. They're right there. The Russians will be the kind of the bigger question mark. I think we know what we're going to get with the Swedes. You just kind of wonder every year the Russians kind of say, play possum. You know, are they going to be the juggernaut? Are they going to kind of, you know, bounce around in the round robin and then come up at the end? They always seem to be there at the end. But to me, the Swedes are clearly going to be a really, really good team. And that Sweden-Russia game, which I believe is New Year's Eve too, should be a tremendous, tremendous game.
Mark, final question for you here. Anybody who's watched the Sarnia Sting this year in the Ontario Hockey League knows that Jordan Kyrou is having a phenomenal season. He's averaging almost 2 points a game. He's a second-round pick of the St. Louis Blues back in 2016. Is everyone expecting Jordan Kyrou to kind of have that breakout World Junior performance this year, kind of similarly to maybe a guy like Jordan Eberle had back in the day with Team Canada?
Quite possibly. I mean, this is a guy who was averaging 2 points a game down the stretch last season in the OHL, and he's carried it over into this year. Spoke to his coach, Darian Hatcher, and he said when he first got drafted by the Blues, he spoke to Doug Armstrong, the GM, and said, you know, it kind of reminds me of Mike Modano in the way that when he carries the puck, he seems to be even faster than when he's just skating, and he can fly. I think that line with Sam Steele and now Dylan Dubé healthy and playing yesterday, that looked like a really, really good line. That could be the line that kind of is the straw that stirs the drink for Team Canada. Kyrou's gotten stronger. He looks just like a menacing force every time he's on the ice. It was good to see him get in on the score sheet and start to get those good positive vibes last night. He did have a point against the Czechs on Wednesday, but it was on the power play. And I think I'm 100% with you. I think that line, especially with Jordan Kyrou on it, could really be the one that Canadian fans are buzzing about. You know, it might end up being the Thomas line with Radish Gachuk. It could be those energy lines that we talked about with Howden and Formanton and those guys, Comtois. But man, Kyrou has been excellent in the OHL this year, was the leading scorer in the league when he left for camp. And I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the way as the tournament we're talking about him in the MVP conversation for the tournament.
He's a first-class reporter for TSN. He's the leader of Masters Nation, and he's a good friend of this program. Mark, also, he's a must-follow for all of your World Juniors coverage on Twitter and TSN. Mark, we always appreciate you coming on this time of year. Happy holidays, and enjoy the tournament in Buffalo this year.
Yeah, happy holidays from myself and everyone else in Masters Nation.
Love it. I'm a member of Masters Nation. I love it.
Glad to hear. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Mark. When we come back, one final segment. We have to talk about the red-hot Manitoba Moose.
Oh, we're talking about the Moose.
They're in first place in the American Hockey League. They just don't lose. We'll be back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN 1290. It's the final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back. The final segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Kevin Bozeman, his final night tonight.
Yeah, he goes back to Chicago tomorrow.
Yeah, he goes back to Chicago tomorrow, so he's got two shows tonight, so go to Rumors Comedy Club and get your tickets. Kevin's our boy. He's a hilarious guy.
Yeah, really
we've been
fun.
Hanging out with him all week. We went bowling on Monday, mm-hmm. Had a great time. Shout out to Academy Lanes, by the way, who are moving in January to a new location. Mm-hmm. So it's great that you know, they allowed us to come bowl and stay open. They didn't just stay open for us.
No.
But it kind of felt like that a little bit.
Yeah, you know? It was us and the Tony's Pizza guys.
Yeah. Shout out to the Tony's Pizza guys. Great pizza, Tony's Pizza.
It was a little disconcerting when I was sitting there saying to Ezzy, who are those guys? They look really familiar. And then I realized it was the delivery guys in the...
You had just seen them ordering a pizza.
Exactly.
It's an Industrial Metals game day here. Puck drop coming up at noon live from Brooklyn. Rick and Darren are going to take over in about 10 minutes with the afternoon ride, except it's really the morning ride. And then 11 o'clock, Kevin Owen friends are going to have the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Dave, we got to talk about the Moose. You were there last night. You were at the game on Thursday night as well. I mean, what else can you say about the Manitoba Moose aside from these guys are just rolling right now?
No, yesterday was probably the worst performance, especially the second period. It's probably one of the worst performances of the year, and this team still manages to come out with a win. And I think that just shows that is a testament to how good the team is that they can have a poor performance and still come out with the victory. I talked to Cameron Schilling after the game, and I said, you know, like you guys had a 2-0 lead going into the second period, yet they got outshot 20-5. And you always expect a bit of pushback when a team has a lead, but it felt like they were a bit already thinking about their holiday plans. And he said it was probably good for them because, and Coach Vincent said this as well, they've been beating teams 7-1, 6-1, 5-1. So for them to be in a close game, to get a little bit of a have a close game to close things out, shows them that there's still things that they need to work on and that they're not a perfect team despite the fact that they're having success. I mean, look, in their last 21 games, they're 19-1, 0-1. And they have gone 16 games without a regulation loss. So it's 15 wins and one shootout loss. I mean, this team has just been unbelievable. And it really is top to bottom. And we, you know, people have a tendency to fixate on the high-end prospects, the Jack Roslovics, the Mason Appletons, the Nick Patans, the Sammy Nikus. But the fact is, they've been getting great goaltending from Michael Hutchinson and Eric Comrie. They've also had really good play from their veterans, because not Rick Ralph. He's not a veteran that plays for the Manitoba Moose, but they do have really good success from their Buddy Robinson's having a career year, and he's been
Rick's a pretty good goalie too, though.
He is a good goalie, but I don't know that
when he was on the ice at River Heights Community Center. I mean, there weren't a lot of pucks getting by.
True,
him.
But he won't be supplanting Michael Hutchinson or Jamie Phillips or Eric Comrie. And
Rick just walked behind us here in the TSN 1290 studios.
So you know, there's definitely top to bottom effort and contributions, from this team, and you're seeing it in terms of development from, like I said, Buddy Robinson. He's a guy who's been in the AHL for quite some time, but he's having already on pace to have a career year. You know, you're seeing growth in local product, for example, Peter Stojkovic, who in my mind has taken a huge leap in terms of his play, both defensively and offensively. Sammy Nikku, I mean, he's a high-end prospect that's just got oodles of talent, but again, needs seasoning. I mean, guys people have a tendency to be seduced a little bit by points, and they see these guys. When you have a team that's scoring as many goals as the Manitoba Moose, you know, there's going to be lots of points dished out, and a lot of players are going to be picking up assists. You have to, you know, it's a collective effort, and it's collective development, and so sometimes players need to get more seasoning, because, you know, what you might not see if you're not at the games is the little things that guys do, the little mistakes that, you know, at the AHL level, they aren't as harmful necessarily, but at the NHL level, you're just not going to be allowed to make that mistake. And so that's why when players see Sammy Nikku and they say, oh, well, you know, he's top five in defenses scoring, number one rookie scoring defenseman, bring him up to the NHL. Well, no, because there's elements of Sammy Niku's game that need to be worked on.
He has a left shot, though.
That is true.
Just kidding. No, he is a left shot, but I'm just saying the argument has been that, you know, the Jets are too strong on the right side for a guy like Tucker Pullman to get in the lineup, right?
Right, absolutely. And that's the impressive thing about this Moose team, is the fact that you've got Tucker Pullman and Julian Melchiori up right now helping out the Jets in some capacities. So you've got, you know, kind of had a shift in terms of the defensive play. But really, you know, you've got guys like Go to Vets who stepped up. Jan Kostolek is playing okay. So really, it's again, it's a very good collective group effort. But, you know, I was saying it last night. It was funny. I started, then I realized I had to get to bed because we had to be up for the show today. But I was starting to kind of go through the team, and then I realized, like, it's probably something that I'm going to have to do for LegalCurve.com, because it's too time-consuming to talk about each individual player and the growth of all the players. And we don't even have enough time in this segment, really, to go over every single player as much as I'd like to in terms of their development, in terms of their growth. So really just, you know, the standards. Jack Roslovic leading the AHL right now in scoring. You've got Mason Appleton, who's the number one rookie scorer for and top five in the league. And again, like I said, Sammy Niku's having a really good year. But again, that's just scratching the surface on the contributions, the efforts from, like I said, you got Mike Scarbosa's contributing, Brendan Lemieux, Chase DeLeo, Cameron Schilling. I mean, I'm literally going to name every player because, you know, even to be honest with you, even the fourth line, Michael Spacek, Cam McLeese, and Jansen Harkins, two of those guys being the 2015 draft class for the Winnipeg Jets, are having big impacts. Michael Spacek has been really effective on the power play. His confidence is growing. I mean, he's a longer term prospect for Jets fans to be aware of. But he I think is a kind of a dark horse player. He's going to be one to enjoy watching for the next couple of years with the Moose. But I think he's got some potential there. So. So there really is just so many things to like about this Manitoba Moose team.
It's pretty fantastic, Dave, when you consider the Moose have missed the playoffs the last couple of years, and now they're atop the American Hockey League standings. And as you mentioned, Jack Roslovic leading the AHL in scoring, Mason Appleton leading all rookies in scoring. The Moose have the next week off, so they're going to be able to eat some turkey and unwrap some presents. They're back on December 30th and December 31st with a couple of afternoon games against the San Jose Barracuda.
Bobblehead game.
That's right. Dave, that's going to do it for us this morning. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us this morning. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun, Mark Masters of Masters Nation and TSN, Andy Graziano, New York Islanders beat writer for Sportsnet New York. Thanks to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. That's the last Illegal Curve Hockey Show of the year. It's been a great year, 2017. We'll be back on Saturday, January 6th, 2017. Coming up at 9 o'clock, it's the afternoon ride with Rick Ralph and Darren Bauman. And then 11 o'clock, it's the Winnipeg Jets pregame show with Kevin O. Thanks very much for joining us. Happy holidays. Have a happy new year. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together, the team will be